since Gene Maloff passed on, and gosh, a couple of years, it's going by so fast now. Do you think, and how close was he, Bill, to getting that alternative energy pushed to get cold fusion, for example, which was his lifelong goal?
Well, he was certainly one of the main, if not the most important promoter of cold fusion. He wasn't technically a cold fusion scientist. And I knew him several years before his death, and that's how I became involved in the New Energy Foundation. I was the chairman before his death, but after he died, of course, I was in the position of having to take it over, and then became an editor as well. And we have two other editors, by the way. One of them is a cold fusion specialist.
Uh-huh.
So we actually have on our staff, we have somebody that's really a real, you know, cold fusion scientist himself. So, we also have another scientist on there. Scott Chubb is our cold fusion person, and we also have Peter Grineau, who's a physicist and has some other theories on electric arc explosions and so forth that he's been proposing in recent issues.
Some say cold fusion will never happen. What do you
think? Some say it will never happen, but I do believe it's been proven that it's a real science, and now the thing is to prove it, that it's a real technology that can be made commercial, and there's the problem. And Gene, at the time of his death, was getting frustrated with the amount of time it took. He believed it was a real thing and pushed on it hard, but he was also getting interested in other forms of new energy. And since his death, more time has gone on, and you know, the principle is proven more and more in terms of science. But it's very evasive, the actual product that can come out of it. There's no doubt in our minds that this is real science. I mean, there's still people out there that argue that it's a bunch of hooey and so forth, but they're just flat wrong on that. This is real science, and just because the current science paradigm doesn't allow for it doesn't mean it's not real. And that's one of the reasons that we are taking a slightly different approach now. We're trying to promote new science as well as new technology itself, you know, new gadgets and machinery and thing.
This depending on oil continues to bother me, because we're not really doing anything to get off it. We're really not.
We're not doing enough, that's for sure. And the money that's spent on other things, Richard was talking about money being spent on the wrong things. We spent $2 billion digging a big hole in Texas for a big cyclotron, you know, an accelerator. A circular accelerator.
And there's a particle accelerator in CERN up there in Switzerland, and God knows what's going to happen to that when that goes online.
At least that one's gone online, but they spent $2 billion and then filled the hole in or quit, you know. That was several years ago, maybe 20 years ago now. But, you know, if you just took some of these boondoggles and took the money and spent it on something like cold fusion, we would probably have some real answers now. And, you know, there's absolutely no reason that we have to be fighting wars in the Middle East over oil. We don't really need that oil. I mean, there's more than one way of avoiding the need for that oil.
When are we going to get to the point, at least where, for our homes, we don't have to worry about power outages, Bill. We don't have to worry about energy costs. We've got our own self-contained energy system in our houses with power, unlimited power. A storm will blow through. You don't have to worry about the power lines going out, or you can't have air conditioning for 5 days in the summer, as it happened in St. Louis last year. When can we do that, either with, you know, solar panels or what have you?
Well, I was once in the solar business back in the early days of it, it is possibly certainly feasible with solar panels and with wind at this point. But, you know,
neighborhoods aren't going to let you have windmills.
Well, that's right. For the most part, they won't. And sometimes there's a reluctance to have solar panels. I mean, we had a case here in New Hampshire where it was a historic area, and they were very reluctant to let somebody put solar panels on the front lawn, you know. And they finally let it happen, but And you may know about the problem with windmills off of Cape Cod. You know,
yes, it's not aesthetically pleasing.
So these are real issues, and unfortunately, solar and wind are very distributed energies, and they also are not always there, which brings us a little bit to the geothermal issue. You know, Richard's subject, and the geothermal energy is another problem. I mean, that's hard to get at, but at least it's always there. So you could have a choice of these systems. Like you say, wind is probably not the one of choice. So you're probably stuck with solar and storage and maybe a little enhancement with geothermal. For example, the solar could run a heat pump, which would get the heat out of the ground more efficiently, and that would...
And you need a capacitor. You got to have some way to store it.
Right.
And do we have one yet?
We don't have anything that's a whole lot better than the old battery systems. You know, now there's some lithium-ion batteries and other batteries that are used in laptops and so forth.
Our cell phones.
That are far, far better than a lead-acid battery. But when it comes to storing energy for a house cost-effectively, I'm afraid it's the old lead-acid battery still.
Yeah, because if you have cloudy skies for 2 weeks, you're out of luck.
You are, and if you're in the days when I was in the solar business, it's mostly thermal, and you had to have a big tank in the basement to store heat, or a huge rock bed, you know. And these things are not really user friendly when you come right down to it, and it's part of the problem with these alternatives. So we really do need some cold fusion device. We need something that is more compact, that gets energy from ways that we don't yet understand.